Welcome to Educated Conjecture, an Ipsos podcast that combines what the public thinks with what the experts think. Each week, Ipsos's Mike College and Sean Simpson are joined by an informed guest to discuss a current or emerging issue. What's driving menu innovation for quick service restaurants in the face of broader health and post-COVID trends? In this episode, Aaron Cohen, Director of Consumer Insights at Tim Hortons, joins Mike, Sean, and guest host Jacqueline Chiarello from Ipsos's Innovation Group to talk about how data from both customers and broader trends is influencing Tim Hortons' evolving offer to Canadians. Warning, this episode may make you very hungry. And now, on to the podcast.
Welcome to, hopefully, it'll be our first Educated Conjecture for 2023. As usual, Alan Gates is behind the screen making us sound good, and my colleague and co-host Sean Simpson isn't here, but I do have a guest co-host and Jacqueline Chiarello from our innovation group. Hello, Jacqueline. She's a vice president there. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for letting me join, Mike.
Well, thank you. And before we get to our guest, because we always have a guest, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about before we introduce our guest. Because we often, as you know, Jacqueline and Alan, talk about the public policy side of the world. And because it's the focus that Sean and I generally come from. And we look at how do we bring the voice often of Canadians through our research into policy and into programs. And today, I think it's sort of neat because we're going to have a guest on and Jacqueline is going to talk to her about how we bring the voice of Canadians into something like food and into, you know, that offers and choice and things that they can get. So we always start off, Jacqueline, with a stat of the day, and I won't put you on the spot for a stat of the day like I would Sean, but I'll tell you too that from our global trend study that has a study about February, March of this year, it's a survey across 50 countries looking at big, broad global trends. And I just want to pull two data points about Canadians. And one is, you know, right now, 61%, 6 in 10 Canadians say they're happy going into 2023. At the same time, the exact same number, well, actually 62% of Canadians say they think the country is on the wrong track. And I think it shows both the duality of sort of how we can separate our personal lives. Well, 6 in 10 isn't a great number. We'd like to see 9 in 10, 100% people happy. We can separate our personal lives and how we're feeling about how we're doing from the direction of the country. And if you don't have to look very far past the paper to look at declines in healthcare and worries about our institutions and those kind of things to seek some of the angst. So that just gives you a bit of an understanding of sort of the mindset of Canadians as we go into the year. And we'll obviously come back and do more podcasts and discussion about that. But Jacqueline, we have a guest. Would you like to introduce her?
Absolutely. So today joining us, we have the Director of Consumer Insights at Tim Hortons. Aaron Cohen's been joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. I as I mentioned up front, you know, I'm a geek for how we bring Canadians' voices to policy and programs. And I love that Jacqueline and her team in the Innovation Group have brought with you and Tim Hortons the voice of Canadians into that food, right? And then I mentioned up top how, you know, people are dissatisfied with the direction of the country. And you know what? Food's a very comfortable thing, something we all like, something we all reach to at different times. So it'd be great to just talk about sort of the process and some of the findings and how you did it both internally within Tim Hortons and what the end result has been, in terms of food choices and those kind of things. Jacqueline, maybe you can start off with, I will put you on the spot. What do we do in layman's terms in innovation research?
What we do from an innovation team perspective is we partner with our clients to help them understand and prioritize within their pipeline. So really help them figure out what are the pain points that your consumers are looking to solve within, let's just use quick service restaurants as the example. What are they looking for to get out of their breakfast food run? And then help them really understand how the ideas in their pipeline help solve some of those needs so that they can really prioritize the products that are going to best serve their consumer group. So really just help them figure out where they need to be playing from an innovation perspective and how they can really execute on that with excellence. And I think Tim Hortons has really partnered with us really consistently on working and developing that front end element, so that they've really tied everything and all the decisions that they make so back to what consumers are asking from them.
Excellent. And before we get into what consumers are asking, because I just want to bug Aaron for a second, I think Tim Hortons iconic, right? It's on every corner. You know, my kids grew up playing Timbit soccer, Timbit hockey, those kind of things. So it's woven into the community. Do you have any numbers on the reach? Because I think that's what's truly phenomenal and interesting about what you guys have done together.
We're part of the fabric of Canadian lives, which I think is why I feel so privileged to work on this brand. We serve 5 million cups of coffee a day. 80% of Canadians visit Tim's at least once a month. Even with some of our new ways to reach Canadians, that's gaining traction. So 4 million Canadians use our app every month. And that's why, to Jacqueline's point, it's so important for us to listen and develop innovations that Canadians want. This is their brand that are going to meet their needs and are ultimately going to make their day a little bit better.
That's impressive. And I love the point you make about this is their brand. You might struggle if you considered it your brand. And really, you know, I think we're seeing a trend towards where citizens, consumers are defining brands from the outside in, sort of deal. And that's great. So where do you want to start, Jacqueline, in the journey with innovation?
Well, it really has been a journey and one that we've kind of held hands on, really driving some organizational commitment on it. I think it would be really great to almost talk about one of the big successes that you've seen in really helping cement your team's vision for driving some of that kind of consumer-centric idea making.
When we think about where it started, I think it was obviously a leadership priority, and they're so focused on being guest-led and guest-driven. And so my mandate is really inspiring the organization and giving them the tools to be able to do that. And I think you could see that in so many of the products that we've launched over the last couple of years, and we partners with Ipsos on the research to get there. So a really great recent example was our maple bacon breakfast sandwich that we launched last year. And so I think what we learned from our consumers is that they love kind of coming to us for something nostalgic and comfortable, but at the same time, they're always looking for that little twist. And so, and that's was the insight, or that was the need that we were filling, and we definitely saw it in the results. So that was super exciting.
Well, also one of the things we see in our global trend study globally is a return to some nostalgia and a simpler way of life, and people saying, you know what, despite the pace I've been on and the technology I'm dealing with, I want to reach back. So maybe you're starting to see some of those trends reflected in this work as well.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting tension that exists, because with kind of the uncertainty of the world, you want to go back to a place that feels comfortable and safe. But at the same time, for 3 years, we were locked away, right? So yeah. People want to experience new things. And I think that's why we're seeing that evolution of kind of bringing those old favorites with a twist when it comes to food.
I thought you were going to say at the same time, they want an app so that they can get there fast and convenient. So I want to use my app to get my comfort food. It's a great juxtaposition.
They want that too.
We do a lot of data collection where you get data from other sources. What's the process by which you sort of distill that down to help make decisions?
Yeah, so I think it is a funnel for us where we start very wide and then narrow it down to the ideal product and way to talk about it. So it does start with that, who is this consumer? What is their need? What is the tension that we're filling? What's the role that we would have in their life? Then from there, that inspires the innovation that happens, because they are really thinking about creating ideas that are going to fill that need and speak to that consumer. And then from there, we test ideas. We'll have some top ideas that come to the top, and we keep doing iteration on them to make them even more appealing to consumers. Then we figure out, how do we talk about it with them? And then ultimately, we have a strong product and we have a strong way to bring it to life in a really relevant and compelling way.
Different foods for different times of the day. How do you factor that in?
Yeah, so I think we look at our business through different day parts and different occasions, and we're in different places in different day parts. And so, I mean, our breakfast is ubiquitous in Canada. I think we're the number one player.
My kids have it when we go through. It's always breakfast for them.
Yeah.
Never not breakfast for my kids when we go through.
Yeah. And so we're in a little bit of a different place there where it's working well, and how do we continue to bring the classics that people love, but then, as I talked about with maple bacon, having those twists that are going to make them excited as well and bring them to the restaurant more often. The same with kind of our coffee and donut business. That's a very established category for us. We are the top player when it comes to donuts and coffee in Canada. So that's, again, keeping what consumers love about it, but then also having twists on that. Like, we introduced Dream Donuts to our portfolio of baked goods, where it's a little bit more elevated and a little bit more unique toppings. And that's showing that obviously we have our roots in donuts, but we're continuing to evolve with what consumers want. Then there are other day parts where we're really establishing ourselves and learning. And so the PM is something that we are a place where we think we have an amazing opportunity with. And so it's really listening to consumers and understanding, in such a busy marketplace like lunch and dinner, again, what are those tensions that still exist that Tim Hortons can fill? And I think we launched last year our loaded bowls and our loaded wraps, and we've seen such success with that because consumers were looking for something at lunch and dinner that was going to fill them up, that was going to be a little bit unique but still comfortable, but didn't weigh them down.
And something that leans on the health side of the equation, because everybody's focused on improving both their mental and physical health, but it's something that, you know, wasn't a consideration 10, 15 years ago. It was, you know, fast food was just fast. And now they're looking for a whole range of different things.
Yeah. And I think what we learned through that too is the definition of health is changing, right? It's not necessarily about calories and not about kind of taking away fat and things like that. It's about putting real food into your body that's going to nourish you. And that's something that our loaded platform definitely does.
Are there things in a, for lack of a better description, a vault that we don't even consider changing? Because you mentioned donuts and the sort of that core and things you're known for. Like, we don't need to test the double chocolate because it moves fast enough and we're good. And are there things like that you have?
I still think, I mean, the level of investment depends on the maturity of the category. So if it's something, a totally new platform that we're going to bring to the market that maybe hasn't been in QSR, we're going to invest a little bit more in research to understand, is this really meeting the need that we want it to? What does this do for our brand? And then there's other places where we're still doing research in our due diligence, but we have a lot more understanding of what consumers need and want.
Okay.
And I think I really like that you guys are kind of constantly keeping a pulse too on why consumers are making the decisions that they're making. So especially when you think about some of those established product lineups, it's really about understanding why are consumers leaning into them and what about them is really working continuously, so you can stay on top of making sure that some of those products that are staples continue to perform as such.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, what's interesting about Tim's obviously is that we're comfortable and nostalgic, but at the same time, we want to be a relevant and modern brand. So we want to give the things that consumers love to them, but we also want to show that we're changing and we're listening as well. So it's keeping that balance.
Yeah, and change attracts new people to try new things, and you know, everybody likes some variety in their life, even if they order the same thing all the time. you mentioned communications, and I just wondered, do you have an example, or how much, or can you talk about sort of sometimes you know it works, but you need to do some communications around it to like make the link for people or educate people that you know, this is something that you'll like, and here's why we've put it in. Here's why it may not fit with what you thought we were going to do or what you've seen before. But do you have any examples of that?
Yeah, I think we always do extensive research, especially when it comes to maybe something, a platform that is new to our menu, about how to talk about it with consumers. And I think it's doing that due diligence up front, again, to understand what's their need, where can Tim Hortons play a role in that? So then it does feel like a natural fit once we've launched it. And so by the time that we get to the stage where we're putting together communications and our creative, I think we feel really confident that we know the most compelling way to talk about it because we've done our due diligence throughout that funnel.
One question kind of back to your funnel too, the way that you describe the way in which your company really approaches some of their innovation work is very thoughtful in the way in which you guys have constructed the funnel. And I know that you've worked really hard to be able to instill kind of that systematic approach. Are there any highlights that you would share about what really worked consistently as you guys continued to shape kind of what that funnel should look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think we felt pretty confident in the funnel, but I think that as we've gone along and we really partner with our stakeholders and we listen to them and get their feedback, we understand kind of white space that's in that funnel and maybe tools that we need to add to the funnel to make sure that they have all the information that they need and all the tools that they need to be truly consumer led. So for example, we recently did insight testing with you, which I think was a great addition to our funnel where we made sure that we really validated that these are tensions that exist for us to be able to fill within the QSR landscape. And so it was taking a little bit of the guesswork out of it. And I also think, too, what was so great about that is sometimes we do research and we have, I mean, we call them need states, which are essentially occasions where it's a little bit kind of like research gobbledygook. It can be where I think we geek out on it, but then our stakeholders and our marketing team are kind of like, I get it, but I don't know how to bring it to life. And so I think through this insight testing, I think through doing kind of consumer connects where we actually had our guests come to our office and our marketing team talk to them, we actually hear the words that they're using. We hear them describing their life and the role that Tim Hortons has in it. And then we're able to really talk to consumers in a consumer-facing way when it comes to our creative. And that's really in the top of their mind when they're working on innovation. They're thinking about that consumer who they talked about. So I think for me, we all felt good about the funnel. It was more about how do we bring all of our learnings to life in a really tangible way for our stakeholders so they can action on it.
You have a very data-driven menu, very data-driven approach to everything. How do you align that internally, right? And I, we talked a little bit about it, how you bring people in, but just has it been an easy path to build a culture that's data-driven internally for you?
I think because leadership is so supportive of it, it hasn't been a challenge to get people on board. But I do think we're always looking for ways to demonstrate the power of the data and that it leads to tangible results. And so I think we're very thoughtful about showcasing that, you know, when you do have an insight-driven new innovation, this is what happens from a sales perspective. And so I think that we've taken it from kind of blue sky concepts into reality, and people are seeing the actual benefit from a sales perspective when we do follow this approach and be super data-driven.
So it sounds like some really great work has been done up to date. What would be coming from an innovation process perspective?
So I think what we've done a really great job in partnership with Ipsos is really, like, we listen to Canadians, we listen to our stakeholders. So last year we did interviews with them to understand what's working with the process and where maybe we can elevate the process. And so what's great is that we've identified some white space that we have in terms of our learning. I think what's super important and the Tim's team is really looking for is even taking that broader look outside of what's happening in QSR and understanding what's happening from a macro trend level, the way Canadians are feeling, and how that's impacting the way that they're eating and living. Because I think sometimes we get stuck in our little world. And so I think that we can be even more relevant to Canadians if we take that broader perspective. And I think that even leads to stronger innovation and stronger communication.
Just for the novices, white space, unmet needs, is that what that is? When you say we found a white space, there's a spot where we think we can play that we don't necessarily have anything yet?
Yeah, I mean, that's how we define it from, yeah. I guess, a marketing perspective. When I've been saying it here, I think it's a white space in our process and a white space in kind of the knowledge of the system.
How did the stay-at-home world impact you in your thought process anyway? Like suddenly you went from millions of people who drive by to, you know, roughly probably a 70% decline in drive-bys just because that's how the world changed.
It was a really good learning. And I think this is going to be moving forward that convenience is obviously so important, but it's important not to be solely a convenience-driven business. And so you need to have something compelling enough from an experience standpoint, from a product standpoint, that's worthy enough of having people go out of their way for you and leave their house. Because, I mean, people are starting to go back to the office, but it's not going to be what it was. And so we need to make that interaction or that experience special enough that people are willing to leave the comfort of their home, put on their sweatpants and leave the house. And so I think that's been a big learning for us. And I think that's how we approach our business now, that this needs to be worthy enough of someone leaving their house, not just because it's along the way somewhere.
Cool. Do you have any data or thoughts on the whenever I go past the Tim Hortons, there's I'll say this because I'm almost 60, the five old guys in the corner who are having coffee every day and it's become their meeting place. Like, I can pick their demo because I can walk in and chat with them, but what drives them, you know, it's more than the coffee, right? And I'm saying it's not the coffee, but clearly in many communities, it's become a town hall. Maybe they just don't have access to social media because they're not there. So it is their definition of social media, but do you have any thoughts on them?
Yeah, and I think depending where you are in the country, Tim Hortons plays a different role. And that's why when we're doing our research, we're very thoughtful around looking at things regionally, but also by urbanity, because we want to show that we're growing and changing. But at the same time, we don't want to alienate anyone. Maybe you're in those more rural communities where Tim Hortons is the meeting place and it's this institution. And so we're very thoughtful about what we're introducing. So it is going to appeal across the country.
I say that, and I should preface it. I live in a small rural area. So that's what you see locally. But when I go to work in Toronto, you still see people sitting in the corner having quite in-depth conversations. They're just not the same demographic makeup. At least I do. So
yeah, and I think, I mean, we're part of the community, but I think through our research, we're realizing that every community across Canada is different, right? You can't kind of paint it with this broad stroke of Canadians anymore, and so I think what's so amazing about Tim Hortons is whether it's urban or rural, we do have a unique role in the community in consumers' lives. And so I think that's something that's really special about our brand that I don't think other brands have.
But at the same time, a huge challenge of reflecting rural Eastern Ontario, downtown Vancouver versus downtown Winnipeg, finding a consistency of product and service and feel. Because I do think people, when they travel, do expect a certain amount of, I expect that the Tim Hortons site get in Russell, Ontario, to feel very similar to when I go into one Mississauga or along the highway or wherever. So
Yeah, and I think so much of being able to tailor the experiences, our amazing team members and restaurant owners, they know their community so well and their needs. And so that's why when every restaurant is a little bit of a different experience that's going to meet the needs of that community, because the restaurant owner and the team members know them so well and know what they need.
They're from the local community.
Yeah.
Often. Yeah. Excellent. What's the best thing about working at Tim Hortons, Erin?
I mean, as you were saying at the beginning, it's a tumultuous time in our world. And I think I feel so lucky to work on a brand, even in a small way, that makes people's lives a little bit better and a little bit easier, and does play such a role in communities and gives back. And so I have so much pride in that. And I mean, I also feel so much pride in seeing the work that I do impact the amazing launches that we have, and I play a role in driving sales results. So to me, that's so gratifying.
Excellent. Jacqueline, what's the best thing about working with Erin?
With Tim Hortons.
Let's say at Tim Hortons.
Working with Tim Hortons is wonderful. They really walk the talk. I mean, I think when they talk about wanting to make decisions in a consumer-centric way, they ask the right questions to be able to inform those strategies. We really feel the energy and enthusiasm to understand what Canadians are looking for and help use their voices to prioritize what they're bringing to the world and how to bring it to them in a really compelling way that reflects how they feel and how they speak. And it's just really exciting to partner with a group of clients that you feel like really take to heart the consultation that you're providing. So we really see that, like, even our voices continue to echo through their halls and then echo into the market. So just the way that Erin feels so much pride and kind of seeing some of those launches come to play, they feel like my little babies when they come to market as well.
It must be nice to see things that you started and think ideas that started a year ago, like, you know, end up being a product, you know, a year later that is fulfilling a need and working on the shelves and making people happy.
And tasting delicious, Norm.
And tasting delicious.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, I think that was a given. I assume that there are things that don't get past the testing stage because they don't, you know, they don't meet the majority of taste. Well, this has been great. Thank you. I from a public policy perspective, I would love to see more voice of Canadians in a thoughtful funnel process, as you described, brought into some of the policy work, whether it's on healthcare or a range of other things. You know, that whole notion of being driven by the data, and fantastic to hear about an organization that you don't have to convince them that data matters, that really wants to hear from Canadians on a regular basis and has that sort of ongoing refreshing look at things. So thank you very much, Erin, and thank you, Jacqueline.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Educated Conjecture. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts for another episode of Public Opinion and Informed Insights. If you have a comment, a suggestion, or a topic you'd like to see covered on an upcoming episode, please send us an email at publicaffairs@ipsos.com. That's publicaffairs@ipsos.com.